African Literary Podcast, episode 4 here, and it's interview time. Today we're interviewing Angela Makolwa, South African author who was in Kenya a few months ago. She is a writer of 4 novels, starting with Red Ink, followed by The 30th Candle, and then the third book is Black Widow Society, and the last and most recent one is The Blessed Girls. This interview was conducted at a restaurant at the Fairview Hotel, so you might hear like a interesting background. Enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll start the interview with asking why you are in Kenya.
All right. I'm here at the invitation of the Gute Institute. I've just launched my new novel, The Blessed Girl. It's set in South Africa. I'm South African by nationality. So, yeah, I was invited to artistic encounters, which pairs two different types of artists. And so I was paired with Patricia Kihoro, an amazing, very talented Kenyan actress. So she acted scenes from my novel, and it was very well received by the audience.
Aha. So how has the experience been so far?
Wow. It's been more than amazing, fantastic. It's one of the best, I think, experiences of my writing life, because first of all, I mean, I didn't know what to expect when I got here. I knew that Kenyans probably don't know me that well, like the ones that know me, the few that know me probably through social media, through Zuki Swavane, a good friend of mine now based here. So I was very surprised, pleasantly surprised and awed to have a great, first of all, great audience that and a few of my of the people in the audience actually were very familiar with my work. They'd read a couple of my books. Some of them had read all of my books. So a very pleasant surprise. And the experience of having a trained actress and well-established as well, reading from a South African novel and reading with a South African accent, very surprisingly, so which clearly tells a lot about what you know, how good she is. I mean, I've not had such an experience in South Africa, so it was really a beautiful evening for me, and I'm hoping to come back to Kenya again sometime soon.
Okay, so we mentioned that they've read some of your work. So your first book was Red Ink. So you want to tell us a bit about this book and you know how you got to write your first novel.
Okay, so I was a journalist in South Africa. I'm a trained I studied journalism and worked as a journalist briefly. And during that time, I covered crime stories. So one of the big crime stories of the time were centered around Moses Sithole, who was a serial killer. He terrorized women during the mid to late 90s. He had a total body count of, 42, 43 women. He'd raped and killed them. And so, you know, it was one of the stories that I was covering, and followed the trial. And once he was sentenced, I approached him. I wrote him a letter addressed to, you know, his prison address, and asking him if he would grant me an exclusive interview so that, you know, I can just sit with him and find out who he is and why he did what he did. So he didn't respond to my letter for about a good 5 years. By the time, and then 5 years later, he called me. I was no longer practicing as a journalist. I had just started as a PR agency. And he called me. I had sent him a letter.
Oh, yeah, he called
you
now.
And then he called me on my cell phone. I kept the same cell number. And he said that he read my letter, and he thought that of all the people that had approached him wanting to write his life story, mine was the most compelling, and he was ready to meet with me. I was obviously completely confused. I was in a different world, you know, from my journalism days. And at first, I just didn't even know what he was talking about. But after a few days, I actually remembered writing the letter. So I had asked him to call me, you know, because I was kind of, I just said to him, I'm running to a meeting or whatever. And then when he called me, I had decided that actually I might want to write, it might be worth me going to visit him in prison and just hear what he has to say. and maybe I might even consider writing his biography. So I went to see him. Obviously, I was petrified, and so we agreed to actually work on the project together. At first, I would go visit him constantly in prison, take notes, what little notes I could take with prison restrictions being what they were. But as the project kind of progressed, I realized he was omitting a lot of details that I would need to write a substantial story, and I also realized that he was using this whole kind of project or experiment to kind of redeem himself, you know, tell a different side to what was said in court and in the papers. And I didn't want to be a pawn in his game, because I didn't even believe like his version of events. And so I abandoned the project and told him as such, and obviously he was not happy. But about a year later, I met a publisher whom I'd related the story to, and he thought it was a brilliant, it had brilliant potential for a fiction novel. And that's also Red Ink is that fiction novel.
So it's reality turned into
Yeah,
fiction.
Reality turned into, it's been fictionalized, yeah.
Okay, how did the book do?
It did very well. It was the first kind of crime novel of its kind, giving a black perspective to crime writing. People were shocked by it, fascinated by it. So it became a bestseller in South Africa very quickly, and it's still quite popular to this day.
So the next book you did was The 30th Candle, which is a bit different from this.
Very different, a huge departure, and I think I needed that departure from the dark world of serial killers. I needed something lighter, but also I was about to turn 30 when I started writing it, and I had a lot of, insecurities about, you know, the direction my life was taking, and I had a lot of questions about whether I was where I thought I would be at 30. And I found that, you know, around the people around me, my age mates, my peers, were having the same issues. So I just decided to pen a story around four women who were facing, you know, their 30th birthday. They were university friends. And so just captured this milestone from different perspectives, you know, like one was in a kind of long-term relationship, another one is very career focused but career orientated, another one of the ladies, Shade, is very kind of she was a wild girl turned good girl. So I had a lot of fun with those characters, and people relate to those characters. People tell me that they made life decisions based on some of the of how the lives of some of the characters, you know, kind of evolved, and so it's been a very fascinating, it's just fascinating to me to talk to readers of 30th Candle, because they have such amazing personal stories to tell me based on their reading of the book.
So it was again well received.
It was very, that one is, I think it's the people's favorite.
Yes, I'm a victim.
Yeah, so, you're a victim. You're part of the people.
I'm part of those victims. Then your third book, you went back.
I went back to my life of crime. And crime I find very challenging as a genre, because you really have to keep your reader constantly on your toes. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes you don't. But I do love the challenge of kind of weaving that story that has a lot of kind of dark alleys and cliffhangers and keeping kind of the reader on the edge of their seat. It's challenging to do that, and just intellectually I find it quite an interesting exercise. So Black Widow Society, it's actually being adapted into screenplay.
Now you want to please tell me about it. What does it mean when a book of yours becomes a screenplay? What does it do for you as a writer?
Well, I mean, it's still early days for me to be able to speak with authority on that. But one of the big kind of reality checks that I had to kind of adopt very quickly is that the screen as a medium is very different from print or from the book. So the first thing that you really have to prepare yourself for as an author is that the screenplay may be vastly different from you know, your original work. But obviously these are things that are subject to your, like, your negotiation as an author, that you have to assert some authority on, you know, your intellectual property. So I think it's one of those dances that you have to do in life. Like, you have to do, you and the producers have to basically fight, well, work it out until you get to a happy medium, if possible.
Okay.
You know?
So, yeah. But I'm sure it's quite exciting.
It's quite exciting, but also I think it's it also depends on the writer. Some writers decide to actually co-write a screenplay, you know, so that they retain the essence of the book. But I have allowed, like, I've basically said to these guys, like, I'm not a screenwriter. I'm a novel writer. I'm an author. So, you know, you go write the first draft, show me what you have, and let's see if it's something that I'm comfortable with, which at the moment is not, what they have is not something that I'm comfortable with at all. So yeah, that's what I'm saying, that it's a delicate balance. We basically have to go back and forth quite a bit until we get to something that maybe we could both be happy with, and then, you know, you take it from there.
Now, your fourth book, The Blessed Girl, I mentioned to you, like, when you read the book, it reads like one of our very well-known socialite people, Vera Siddiqui.
Yeah, that was one of the eeriest experiences of my life, because I started thinking that maybe I have some spiritual powers that I didn't know I possessed. Because obviously I wasn't even aware that this person existed. I'm South African, she's Kenyan. And so when I saw a clip of her on YouTube, I almost collapsed, because everything that came out of her mouth, down to the type of car that she drives, down to the kind of treatments she does on her body, it was, you know, chapter, verse, text of the character in my book. It's the strangest, down to the nationality of her lover. You know, it's just like, you know, you can't make this stuff up, you know. So, but I think what was illuminating about that is that this trend, which is a very big South African trend, very disturbing for me, you know, as an observer, is actually not limited to our shores. It's actually something that is happening, you know, across the continent, maybe across the world, where women use their looks to fund, to access, like, a luxurious lifestyle that they may not be able to access on their own. And sometimes what disturbs me about it is that sometimes you find that the woman is actually talented enough. She has it within her. She has the wherewithal to actually, you know, build a life for herself and fund it and be, make a success of her life. But because there is this thing called a blesser or a sponsor here in Kenya, people kind of choose that the easy way out. But obviously it comes with a price, you know, because most of these men, they are married, they are older, and because they've got the power of money, because they are keeping you in that lifestyle, they can dictate a lot of things that as a woman you may not want to be dictated to. You, like, you lose a lot of your power, because their bargaining chip is, I'm funding your house, your car, your body, so I own you. You know, so for me, that's the concern. It's, yes, maybe it looks good on paper when you're posting on social media pages, but what is the price, you know? And that's what the book really explores. It doesn't water down the glamour of it. I don't take away the fact that, you know, for instance, my character does live in a penthouse. She does go to exotic places that a lot of people her age would not be able to access, you know, but also I reveal the darker side of it, the darker side of that life, because as an author and as an artist, and as, you know, you even if you may have your own judgments about a certain lifestyle or a certain issue, but there is a level of objectivity that you have to employ when writing your book, because then you're not out there to preach to people. You know, you're telling a story. So that was a very interesting experience for me as well, because I did come in with certain judgments, but by the end of the book, the character is much more human, and even for me, I had more empathy than I thought I would ever have, you know, for her. So it was an interesting experience. Yeah.
So this is the part where I want to know about your contemporaries. Who are your contemporaries, either in crime or in South African writing, that you would want to recommend like a Kenyan audience to look for? I'm sure you read a bit, eh?
Yes, I do. There are quite a few. There's Nick Mhlongo, who's written a number of novels. After Tears, Dog Eat Dog, Affluenza. There's Thando Mkolozana, who's written a very good book that explores a traditional rite of passage of Xhosa people. And it's clouded in secrecy. The process of circumcision in Xhosa culture is clouded in secrecy. And he was very brave in the way that he explored some of the, things that are regarded as sacrilegious that you don't talk about. Like, he kind of blew the lid on that. And I think it's a very important book. And Zuki Salvana, she's written The Madams, which also takes on its head a very particularly South African tradition of, you know, middle class people hiring, especially middle class white people hiring black domestic workers. So she takes it on its head because she has this middle class black woman who decides to hire a white helper and then becomes, you know, a madam. And she's written Men of the South, Behind Every Successful Woman, and her female characters, like my female characters, are very strong, very independent, and I love that kind of writing, especially now, because women, not only in South Africa but on the continent, kind of need those kind of icons, you know, cultural icons to look up to, because, you know, the world is changing, Africa is changing, and we need to see more of these characters, because it influences what you read, influences how you think and how you perceive the world. And I think I love the fact that a lot of our African men are also reading these kind of books, and it's just kind of a mind-opening exercise, because there's a lot that is happening all the time, especially in the way that women are viewed. So we need to show a different side to women than that which has been portrayed in the past. And I think that's why those kind of books are important. There's quite a lot.
Quite a few. So I think we'll end it there.
Much